All right, so Don's going to tell you about another aspect of a related study, and it will be colorful, I guarantee.
Well, the first thing about color is I do have green and yellow on, green pants, yellow shirt, but I am not a duck. And if you're a football fan, we're not number one. We're a much fiercer animal. We're a beaver. So... Well, I'm going to talk to you about the effect of urea inhibitors or urease inhibitors on ammonia volatilization. And I'm going to talk about three different studies we did. I'm going to talk about part of the study, the second part of the study that Jess, the previous speaker, talked about. I'm also going to talk about an incubation trial we did. And I'm going to talk about stuff we just wrapped up this fall. So if you think about ammonia in the air, Dan talked about the Columbia Gorge. The Columbia Gorge is ammonia limiting for smog. It's amazing. You got all these trucks and barges and everything going through, putting tons and tons of NOx up there. They don't talk about controlling NOx because they don't figure they'll ever get a handle on it. But they are talking about controlling ammonia emissions. So it turns out that when ammonia and NOx hook up, they perform, they get together, create PM2.5s and PM10s, which are particulates that interfere with sight. Also, they tend to get into your lungs, and you have a hard time getting them out of your lungs. So ammonia in the air also means that we're getting less fertilizer efficiency. So we're kind of coming from this from both aspects. We're coming from the grower aspect. Hey, how can we increase your fertilizer efficiency? And how can we mitigate some of these losses into the air? So here's a visual of haze in the Columbia River Gorge on a quote-unquote clear day and a visual impaired day, so where smog is present. So it's a big deal. The Yakima Indian tribe calls this the Sacred Breath Project. So it's both science-charged and politically charged. And if you ever go to these meetings, they're very frustrating as a scientist. Very entertaining as a sociologist. So the methods, largely it's going to be the same as the previous presentation, at least for the ammonia collection that we use the same ammonia collection device that Jess was using. The products we've looked at a Yara product, CAN27, we've looked at ammonium sulfate, we've looked at a malic acid, which is an organoacid complex, which is a product marketed by Simplot. We've looked at agritane, we've looked at solution 32, urea, and ammonium nitrate. Jeff showed you the ammonium sulfate data. I don't have the ammonium nitrate data. Some of the trials we're doing this year, we got at three different locations at five different sites. We have two sites in Hermiston, one in the Palouse of Washington, and then two in Central Oregon. So this is the bulk of the rest of the irrigation trial data that Jess didn't present. And you can see that we have three different products in here. We have urea, we have agritane, and we have the malic acid product. And the first thing you notice is this is the straight up urea where we're losing 60%. The other thing you notice is this is 60% loss for the malic acid product as well. And as we come down in ammonia volatilization, or increased irrigation rate. So this is the no irrigation applied. This is the 0.1 irrigation applied for both the urea and the malic acid. And obviously these two are not significant, and actually these four are not significantly different from each other. But you can see that as we're increasing irrigation rate, we are seeing decreases in ammonia. And one of the products, the malic acid product, is not much different from ammonia or from urea at the first two irrigation rates, the 0 and the 0.05 irrigation rates. Agritane, which is the three lines at the bottom, it didn't matter. Irrigation rate had no effect on ammonia loss when agritane was used. So current thought in the Columbia Basin is if, you know, this was acid soils. All the work we've done has actually been on acid soils of less than pH 7, as low as in the 5s and relatively neutral, about 6.5. But as we increased irrigation rate, it is significantly, the malic acid is significantly different from urea. This is the malic acid, and here's your urea. So Agritain, no impact. There was an impact of irrigation between the malic acid products. Once you incorporated it, it did change in its ammonia volatilization. Why, I have no idea, because if you leave it at the surface, it doesn't show any difference. So irrigation interacts between the organoacid complex and the malic with the irrigation rate we talked about. Agritain, it's as good as irrigating. So if you're going to use Agritain, you don't have to worry about leaving it on the surface. But if urea is at the surface, you do lose, at this wheat field, a significant amount of nitrogen. So I'm going to talk briefly about the incubation trial we did. We did it at four temperatures. And here's your 4 degrees C. You can see at 4 degrees C, Agritain is about a 75-day product. Starts breaking, it's basically finished at 75 days. Both urea and the malic acid complex are done at about the same time, at about 10 days. As we increase temperature, things start compressing. Agritain went from being a 75-day product at 4 degrees C to, at 16 degrees C, being a 30-day product. And urea hydrolyzed at basically 2 days, 2-3 days. If you notice, there's quite a bit of nitrogen in the system. We also measured nitrate, and we also summed them. But we also think we had enough ammonia in this system that we nuked the bugs. So there wasn't much nitrate being produced for quite a while. We added a little bit too much nitrogen. We took our potato trial, calculated how much nitrogen we apply at one time, and when you put that in a small bag, it's a little bit different than the real world. So anyways, so 16 degrees C, we now have a 30-day product versus a roughly 2-day product. So if we now come to 27 degrees C, we now have Agritain going from 75 to 30. We're now about a 20-day product, and both the malic acid and the urea basically finished in 2 days. So it's completely hydrolyzed and available for volatilization very rapidly, whereas Agritain is spreading it over a much longer period of time. So the summation of the incubation trial is Agritain delayed release as compared to urea, and the malic acid organoacid complex behaved the same as urea. And Agritain was very dependent, well, all the products were dependent on temperature, and Agritain in particular was dependent on temperature as to how much time you have. So this fall's data. I'm looking at four different products. So this takes a lot of polls. I don't know if you noticed that circle that Jess had up there, but every one of those circles inside that circle is another, is a poll. So we got 60 of these things scattered across the country. And, you know, they're all replicated. They're usually blocked. The circle that Jess presented data was blocked into three different blocks because it takes about 24 hours to get that pivot across to apply the irrigation. So we blocked it by timing of getting irrigation and then randomized the treatments within blocks. So this is a fair amount of work. So Jess was out there for probably 36 hours straight between irrigating, spreading fertilizer, getting poles up, collecting his first tubes. So took quite a bit of work. This is a trial we just got done with, which is this fall. We just pulled these out of field about a week ago. And you can see we have urea. And this is basically the same time of year as the field that just showed with the ammonium sulfate in it. So we're losing about 25% of our nitrogen applied. So yes, we are a pivot irrigated system, but with wheat and grass seed fields, we top dress when we don't have irrigation water. We have to shut off irrigation water November 1st, and we don't. So if you're for Kentucky bluegrass in particular, we very well might be fertilizing in November. So we do have the risk of leaving nitrogen at the surface and losing some significant amount of N. And so we presented this to the grass seed growers, and we were just going to do the urea and the Agritane, and they go, no, we want solution 32. We want to see how solution 32 behaves. And surprise to me, but they also wanted to know how CAN 27 does, which is a Yara product. And so if you look at urea, we're losing 25% of our N. If you look at solution 32, you're losing it about half. And half of solution 32 is ammonium nitrate, half of it's urea. So kind of fits kind of nice together. So you're losing about half, and half of it's urea. And then the CAN 27, which is a lime impregnated ammonium nitrate, you're losing about 5% of your N. And Agritane, you're basically losing nothing, or very little, very small amount. So the other site, not nearly as clean, and we're losing about 35% of our N. And so we had a large rainfall event just before we put this trial out, and we had a large rainfall event just after we pulled the tubes out of the field. And so one of the locations actually still had tubes during some of the rainfall, so we'll get to look at what the rain did on one of the other locations. So you can see at this, the other location, these fields are only a mile apart and planted the same, or, you know, they're both new seeded Kentucky bluegrass, no residue on the surface. You're losing 35% of the N on this field, and you're losing just over about 7.5% with the Agritane. So with that, grass seed surface applications of urea on soils lose about 20 to 30% of nitrogen applied. Different fertilizers reduce the amount of N lost differently. And Agritane coated urea had the least loss of any of the products we've measured so far, including the Yara product, which is an ammonium nitrate product. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions. And this is that circle that just explained a little bit. Every one of these circles is one of our treatments. And so the irrigation treatments are on the outside and the product treatments are on the inside. So this is 125 acres and each one of these has to be separated by 300 feet or more to keep from interfering with each other. And we had a grass seed field where we had the poles out. Lo and behold, the grower fertilized right after we put our poles out. So we got a lot of loss on that field because you haven't defined your circle. And so crazy things happen when you're in farmers' fields.
Okay, we have time for a couple of questions.
Yeah. Keith.
The incubation study you did, the results lined up with what I expected. But when you take the Agritane out of the field, you don't seem to get the lift coming up at the end where you thought, okay, that should have run out. We should be getting more volatilization from this stuff. What's your explanation? Did you get rain after?
No, I think it's the gradual pH change. I think when you hydrolyze urea all at once, the pH change is large enough that the soil can't buffer the system, versus when you drag that pH change out of an extended period of time, 2-3 weeks, that there's not enough pH there to really generate the volatilization. I don't think it's the Agritane wearing out where you'd expect ammonium to take off. It's just the pH change isn't there. You're more like ammonium sulfate and things of that nature rather than urea at that point.
We did the same thing on Ontario soil with pH of 7.6.
Well, 7.6, there's enough pH there to generate it on its own. Life is a little bit different. So, yeah, absolutely. Anything else?
Well, as promised, we have a little bit of a hole in the program here, so this allows a little bit of extra time for questions for the earlier speakers. So our first speaker, are there any questions for Bejish? He was the speaker that talked about nitrous oxide emissions in a study in Minnesota. And then after that, we had a modeling presentation by Dr. Chen from the University of Melbourne.
He just left.
Okay. Well, that's one way to get out of a question. All right. So, So do we have any announcements from our divisional chairs as to events we must surely not miss that are coming up? You have questions for Jess, okay. So Jess, why don't you come up here and get on a microphone?
All right, so the question was what the difference was between the irrigation and the rainfall events that we saw in the grass seed fields. And so that was what we were kind of puzzled at first was when we did the irrigation study, we found that about, you know, 12.5 millimeters was able to reduce it with an irrigation. But then we looked back at our grass seed study and we had 9 millimeters followed by 5 millimeters, and yet we still had loss. And I think it comes down to the intensity of that water, is because when we had 9 millimeters of irrigation, that was spread out over a whole 24-hour period. And so when we irrigated, that, you know, half inch or 12.5 millimeters came all at once. And so it was actually able to take the urea and push it further down in the soil, get it to where you didn't have these volatilization losses. What, Don, do you know the pH of the water?
It's about 8. It's Columbia River water. It has an EC of about 0.06, so it's not very buffered as irrigation waters go. It has a total TDS of about 80.
So?
I mean, you might want to repeat that for the benefit of...
All right, so the Don said the irrigation water we're using is about 8, pH of about 8, and so it's not a... highly buffered water, and so if anything, it's probably making the problem worse a little bit because it's got a little bit of a higher pH, which would probably increase the ammonia volatilization. Any other questions for me or Don or Dan? The rainfall data was on a grass seed field. It was on a burned grass, Kentucky bluegrass field.
It was burned. So you did, was it, I mean, how recently had it been burned? Was there still charcoal?
The thing with that burned field was that it was a very weak burned field. And so even though it was burned, there was still a lot of residue there. And if you went out to go actually look for the burned spots, it, you had to look kind of hard. So it was a really quick burn. So, yeah. Anything else?
So how did that surface of rain fed field compare to the surface of the irrigated field as far as residue soil?
First, are you talking about just my stuff or Don's stuff as well? Both?
I think you're the one that showed the rainfall. Yeah. The gray bar lines, right?
Yeah. So the question was, how did the two fields differ between the grass seed field and the wheat field as far as a ground cover? The wheat field, it was planted, and so you actually had the rows with bare soil in between them. Whereas the grass seed field, it was a second year grass seed field, so it had a lot of residue on it. And we talked about the burn, but it was a pretty weak burn, so there still was a lot of residue left on the surface. And then if we go on to what Don just presented with where we were working on grass seed fields this fall, that was a newly seeded, and so it was similar to the wheat study where you just had the Kentucky bluegrass rows and a lot of open ground there. For the amount of loss or the for the precipitation?
Yeah, the difference that this gentleman's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, because similar to the wheat study on that field also, we had the issue of keeping the crop alive, and so we had him irrigate with an inch as well, but we didn't see that melting of the prills, so maybe with that residue on there, it dried out a little bit more quicker than it would if we were on the soil surface. And so that could have been one of the reasons that it contributed to this, the differences between the two plots.